Hi, I'm Dave Rowe, welcoming you back to the Calgary Stampeder podcast. And this week, we're going to continue our look at the crew associated with bringing you football and football talk for the Calgary Stampeders on 770 CHQR. While he's technically not part of the team that brings you football broadcast week in and week out, it really feels like CFL insider Glenn Suter is a part of the team. Suter joins Jock Wilson twice a week on Sports Talk, 7 o'clock on 770 CHQR. And we were able to catch up with Glenn Suter and just get his story, his time in the CFL, his transitioning to become one of the top CFL analysts in the country, and what the game means to him now.
On the Calgary Stampeder podcast, it's a real pleasure to be joined by our good friend. Of course, he is a regular CFL insider on 770 CHQR. I'm talking about Glenn Suter from TSN. Mr. Suter, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for joining us on the Calgary Stampeder podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on.
That's, okay.
Where do we start?
Well, I'm going to take you way back. Now, okay. you were born on Vancouver Island, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, my parents were over on Vancouver Island for years. I was actually born in New Westminster.
Oh, were you born in New West? Okay.
Yeah, spent some time. I know it says in all the fact books I've ever been in that I was in Sydney, Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I've been meaning to edit that. I think it's even in Wikipedia. I've been meaning to edit that I wasn't actually born there, even though it says I was born there. But my parents lived in Sydney for a long, long time.
Okay.
And I ended up, really quite young, just coming out of high school, I ended up living with a player for the BC Lions named Devon Ford. I don't know if you remember Devon.
Oh, yeah.
He was a kick returner from North Carolina. And he came up to play with the BC Lions. And I met him actually because my girlfriend at the time took me to church one day, which was a good idea for me. Could help me along the way.
Helps a lot of people.
Yeah, but, and I met Devon Ford. And he needed a place to stay. And he said, if you want to move out, and my parents were moving to the island. So I said, you know what, I want to stay in Vancouver because I'm pursuing my dream, which is to go to Simon Fraser University, play football there, and then take that and try and produce a either being picked in the draft or if not to walk onto a camp and try to make a pro football team. And I wanted to fight for and dreamed of being a player in the Canadian Football League, honestly, from the time I can remember having dreams. And I want to say 6, 7, 8 years old.
Really?
I was the kid throwing the ball around on the street, trying to keep my feet in bounds at the curb and thinking about playing in the Canadian Football League. My dad would bring me down from, we lived in Prince George for a while when I was really young, and he was in telecommunications and BC Tel at the time. And we'd drive the 500 miles to go to one Lions game a year. And I would go in with a Nally chip seat, empty bag of Nally chips, because they had that promotion in Empire Stadium. And I would go and sit in the end zone, and he would go and sit at the 40-yard line or wherever his seats were. And then after the game, I'd run on the field. And with all the kids, this is 8, 9, 10 years old, and you get to high-five the BC Lions. And I still, to this day, Jock, I have the chin strap of Jim Young, 330. From the BC Lions years and years ago, as he kneeled down when I was like a 10-year-old kid, and he spent 5 minutes talking to this fan.
Wow.
And said, here, have my chin strap. And I still have that chin strap today.
That is such an amazing story, and it tells you just, how important that initial contact is with one of your so-called heroes, growing up. And before I go down that path, maybe just, what was the passion? Why did you want to be involved in football so badly?
I love the fact that, and the game required so many different people, different types of people, different body types, different sizes. If you could be a 300 pounder and you were just as important as the little kid. I mean, and I'll be honest with you, my parents, we weren't poor, but we were careful, and hockey was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey was very expensive, and a lot of my friends were playing hockey, and And my father basically said, listen, why don't you try soccer or something that's not quite as expensive, soccer. And in football, in minor football, at that time in Prince George, when I was very young, all you had to do was have your football shoes. You didn't have to buy the equipment or anything. It was all provided. And you paid the registration fee and you bought your shoes and that was it. And so I got an early taste of football. And the moment I got out there and I was out there with these big, huge guys, I mean, for us as kids, mm-hmm. I mean, you're a lot closer in size when you're really young, but you know, some big guys that couldn't run very well, but were important in a different way. And then there was quarterbacks. And I love the idea of just being able to walk out on the street and throw the ball around with my friends without getting nets and a basketball hoop or things like that. I mean, I love other sports, but boy, I just fell in love with football immediately because of how you had to work together and you were all sort of an integral part and it just grew a friendship and trust with those guys immediately. And I love that part of it.
I kind of wish more kids would do that today because I'm like you, you know, we grew up, we played street hockey. We took the football, you know, out to the field and we played catch and, you know, you can go back and look at all those memories. And I just, you know, maybe I'm old, but I don't see today's kids doing that.
Well, I think there may be sort of a connection with different sports through their Xbox and their, you know, their PlayStations yeah. and things like that. I you know, it's different now, obviously. But, you know, I think there is something to be said by still trying to get your kids outside and, you know, getting to throw the ball around. I mean, just communicating, you know, even to say, you know, if you're playing 4-on-4 or 5-on-5 football, flag football, and you're in the huddle talking as the quarterback to your receiver and you're trying to talk to each other about, in order to accomplish something here today, we have to work together on this play, and this is what I need you to do, and this is what I will do, and this is how we will be successful on this play. I mean, that's communication skills. And then when you're not successful and you feel that empty feeling of losing a game or not successful in a play, then you have to learn how to overcome that. You learn how to train your mind to overcome that. So I think there are so many great life lessons in playing sports and being outside and being in good shape physically, you know, that is missing, that we've got to be careful that we don't let slip and disappear.
Was there an aha moment for Glenn Suter as a youngster saying, okay, I am going to make, you know, football a profession?
There was, and I don't want to be too long-winded on the story, but there really was. It was my coach in high school at Carson Graham High School in North Vancouver. His name is Earl Henderson. He's still with us today. He coached, I think, three generations of football families, basically, where he coached the dad, the son, and the son's son. That's how long he was there. He was my coach, and I didn't know it till years later, but when I was in my grade 11 year going into grade 12, I was playing quarterback in high school, and we were running the run-and-shoot offense. And Mouse Davis had created the run-and-shoot offense at that time. And June Jones, who CFL fans know well, was you know, one of the quarterbacks and architects of the run-and-shoot. So there was a camp in Portland, Oregon, and my coach paid for me in my grade 11 offseason, going into my senior year in high school, to go to this camp and learn from the architects of the run and shoot. So I was down in Portland, Oregon, and I was in this football camp. Didn't know that he paid for it. Thought my parents did. But I had a meeting with June Jones, and I asked him about it much later, like a couple years ago. He didn't remember it. But, you know, I had a meeting. I was the only Canadian kid of about 80 participants in the camp, all quarterbacks, a lot of which have gone on not only to major college football but to the NFL. And the coaches came up and said, listen, you keep with it, you can play Division I college football at quarterback. And I thought, well, I don't know if I'm going to continue to play quarterback beyond high school, but just to hear that from Mouse Davis and from June Jones, and then coming back and finding out years later that my coach had paid for me to go and get that experience, it gave me that boost of confidence to say, maybe this is really possible. I mean, I've always dreamed of it, but then I started believing in it. And then I started training. And then I started really deciding that I'm going for this. And I'm going to spend whatever time is necessary to try and get there and get it done. So that was kind of that aha moment for me to be down in this camp, the only Canadian down there, and have these guys say, hey, you can play top-notch college football on either side of the border. You just keep with it and keep doing what you're doing, because athletically you can still do it, or you can do it. And when I heard those guys say it, I was like, wow. So that lesson, again, is if you played minor football, go and thank your coach later in life when you're a businessman or you're running a company or you're off being a teacher or a firefighter or whatever you're doing. Go back and say to your high school coach or your amateur coach and say, hey, thank you, because I know you did a ton of stuff for me that I didn't even realize at the time, but I certainly do now.
Glenn Suter sharing some great stories here on the Calgary Stampeder podcast and some great advice. I don't want to talk about your pro career because I think most football fans know your pro career. So I want to switch gears when you decided to step into the broadcast booth. I believe 1995 is when you transitioned into the broadcast booth. Tell us that story. How did it work out with TSN?
Well, you know, when I was playing in Saskatchewan, I was, you know, just meeting a lot of different people, obviously, in the city, and fans and friends. And, you know, there's still some of my best friends today are guys that I met while I was playing there. And a couple of them were in radio. And so when I got to know these guys, and we hung out outside of the game and outside of broadcasting, but, you know, just going for dinners and things like that and becoming friends. And then they would bring me on the radio station as a guest while I was playing. And through that process over a year or two, the sports director for the radio station decided that he was going to move on to Ottawa. And we needed, or the station at the time, my friends were working for, needed a new sports director. And so I had a meeting with the producer, and the guy said, you know, what do you think about a career in broadcasting? Because you've been on as a guest as a Saskatchewan Rough Rider with your friends that are morning men for both the AM and FM station. And how would you feel about, you know, maybe auditioning for the gig as sports director and doing both stations and doing sports? And I said, wow, you know, like, that's not what I went to school for. I had no idea if I could do it, but I said, sure, let's give it a try. You know, just sort of keeping all my options open. I certainly wasn't retiring at the time, but I was going to keep those options open and see if I could possibly do it. Why not? And so I did the first audition, and I sat down with the producer, the executive producer of the radio station, and we listened to the tape, and he said, well, you're not very good.
Honesty's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, that's exactly how he said it too. He just sort of, you're not very good. But he said, but the stuff that you're not good at, we can train you. We can help you. But because he said that the comfort level on the air is there. What you're missing is the structure. Mm-hmm. What you're missing is building a story, how you put together a broadcast, you know, all of the things that you have learned throughout the years and preparing for your job, Jock, same thing, that I had no idea how to do that. And so you could tell by listening to me do a commentary on hockey or football at the time in an audition and just not having the structure or any sort of rhyme or reason, or it was kind of all over the map. And he said, so you're not very good, but the stuff that we can, you know, the stuff that you're not good at, we can fix. And it's harder to fix a broadcaster who's nervous on the air, a guy who's intimidated by the mic. And you know, sometimes you just can't teach people to be comfortable. So, you know, you're comfortable. That part we're happy with. And they gave me the job. So while I was playing football for my last 3 years, I did both. I was okay. on the morning show for both stations. Both
getting up early. Getting up early.
I was up at 4 a.m. Yeah, 4 a.m. I'd do the morning shift. I'd go to the facility, the football facility at 9 o'clock after the shift was over, do my weights, do the meetings, get on in the practice field, and then do my preparation and film work after, and then go to the, you know, go to bed, get my prep done for the next morning's sports shows. And, you know, I was a sports director, but doing live the sports mm-hmm. on the air on both sides, like on the half hour on AM and on the top of the hour on FM. And, but there, that was some grind. That was, those were some long days, especially if you extended the night.
Now, that never happened, obviously.
Yeah.
I've been in the business too long. I know what happens a few times, so.
Yeah.
So
that was the beginning.
Yeah. And obviously that opened the door, you know, for when your playing career ended to obviously make the jump to the TV broadcast booth.
Yeah, exactly. So I went from doing that radio for a couple of years, and TSN had actually heard some. In fact, I think they might have done a feature on the fact that I had both jobs, you know, for one of the games that I played in. But it was the Grey Cup in BC. And it was the 94 Grey Cup in BC. I'm not sure if I'm getting that right, but it was that Grey Cup where they knew I had done radio. So TSN called me and said, would you be interested in being a color analyst with John Wells and the late Leif Pettersson? And you would be our third analyst because you're in the game. You guys, we were out of the playoffs. So mm-hmm. I had time on my hands. That was back in those days in Saskatchewan. But I said, yeah, absolutely. I'd love it. I went in. I was sort of the third analyst for the radio broadcast of the Grey Cup because CBC had the rights to the game
television.
But TSN had the rights for radio across the country and even around the world, like overseas for military. So I was a third analyst, and that's when TSN first heard me. And then in that off season, they sent me a note. They gave me a call saying, we are going to add another crew, and Leif and John Wells will be crew number one, but we're going to build a second crew, and we would like you to come and audition. So this was the Friday before I was leaving to drive to training camp on the Saturday. And they called me and said, you'd have to retire, obviously, but we're looking to build and you're going to have to make the decision. We need to know by Monday.
Wow. Pressure.
Yeah. So I wanted to play four more years. I was training in Vancouver. I was ready to go to camp. We were about 3-4 weeks out of camp, but I was going to go early, get my house, get a place to stay, all of those things. And I was prepared for a football season. And they gave me that call, and I turned to my wife and I said, this is an opportunity that, and a window that will close if I don't jump through it. And I had to have, it was maybe the longest weekend professionally of my life because I had to make the decision to walk away from the game. And I wasn't completely sure if I even knew how to be a color analyst.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a leap of faith, and it was less money in my first contract at TSN. That's changed, thankfully. it was less money, and you know, but it had nothing to do with money. It really didn't have anything to do. It had to do with this was the end of my dream that I'd had since I was 6 or 7.
Wow, that's
and now I was going to walk away when I was healthy and I had a 2-year contract. So I called Al Ford, who was our general manager. I had the long conversation with him. He was fantastic. He said to me something along the lines of, you know, Glenn, you will be our safety as long as you want to be, and you have to make this decision. So let me know either way, and you give me a call. But it was fantastic of him to say what I knew wasn't really true, that, you know, anyone can be beat out of their position, and I knew that. But he just said, listen, you're our safety. It is close to camp, but everybody faces this decision at some point in their career. So let us know what you think. My wife would not interject in any way, which was really smart on her part, because if it didn't work out, I would have blamed her. But, you know, basically it was a long weekend of you know, just trying to figure out what the best path would be. And I ended up coming to the conclusion that I was going to make the transition because of two things. One, I had been part of a championship team in 89. And when you sign up to play, that's the goal. The goal is to win and the goal is to be a champion. And when you get that feeling, and I had that feeling, I thought, yeah, I'd love to chase another one, but I have had that feeling. So that was a major factor in the decision. And the other was quite honestly, you know, we were young. We wanted to have a family. I knew I couldn't play football forever. And that at that age, I was probably on borrowed time anyway. And that this is a window of opportunity that could close. So that's why I made the decision.
I tell you what, I've learned a lot about Glenn Suter on this podcast. This has been a great, and I'm out of time. You know, the amazing thing is we could talk for another 20, 30, 40 minutes because I didn't even get to half of my questions. But really appreciate your time and your insight. Love doing the show with you on 770 CHQR, and I will have to do it again, my friend.
Always a pleasure, Jock. Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have on this week's Calgary Stampeder podcast. Just a reminder, we'd love you to take the time out and rate us, let you know what you think of the podcast. Also, drop a line to us. Let us know any great ideas you have for future podcasts. And remember, catch us anywhere you get your podcasts out there. For Jock Wilson, I'm Dave Rowe.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.